This. Welcome everybody to another one of our Wednesday Night Wonders. We are here tonight and our title is Let's Talk Assessment, and we have a room full of UWs. So hosting us tonight, we have Deb Sasma, Jenna Stark, and Rachel Stephenson. Did I say that right? Stephenson?
You're good.
Okay, all from UWL. Yes. And we have Steph. Where did you say you're from? I've forgotten already.
That's okay. Westby Area School District.
Westby Area. Okay. And we have Dan Tim down there from UW-Madison. And we have our adopted Dustin, who got his master's from UWL.
Right.
I'm a UWL grad too, so we're all in the same boat.
Nailed it.
Dustin, where are you teaching?
I teach at the Alma Center Humbert, Maryland School District, which is by Black River Falls.
Okay. Almost. Okay. Holy cow.
So we're about 40 miles south of Eau Claire.
Okay. All right. Well, do you want me just to go ahead, Penny?
Yeah, it's all you. Okay. It's all of us, but you take
it's all us. Yeah. And what I had said to Penny is assessment is something that, we're getting better at. I specifically hired these two within the program because that's their thing. And they're very good at it and they're very good at teaching it. And so I said, I need you guys to come and answer questions. I'm just going to set it rolling. But in all honesty, it's one of the things that programmatically we've struggled with. And I find that when we talk with current teachers, they want to ask questions. How are you doing things? And, you know, what are you thinking about? And how do I do this or, you know, the different domains. And so really, I have no plan. We're here to answer questions. Or if you want to give us something to talk about, we can start it that way. Really just more of a, how can we help you? Or what ideas can we give you? And that's really what we want to be here as a resource. And so Dustin Penny said that we're guaranteed questions from you. or we can talk about what we're doing right now and how we're approaching things or how we've changed things. Tell us what would be most helpful for you. Steph or Dustin, is there anything that you'd like us to in particular talk about?
I'm trying to find some new ways to assess skills, not with a skills test, and try to broaden my just focusing on the skills.
Okay, so all right, it's fine. I think, and I've got a kid running around back here too. So are you thinking in different domains other than the psychomotor domain, so the cognitive domain, or are you thinking different ways of assessing skills themselves?
Yeah, that last one, just assessing skills themselves. Like I have my own rubrics and what I expect for our scoring at our school, and I just trying to get some new ideas, switch it up a little bit.
Well, the first elementary, middle school,
I'm elementary, I'm K through six.
Okay. So the first thing that comes to mind, I really like Mauston's spectrum of teaching styles. And one of the things with the upper elementary that I taught at the high school level, and one of the things that I employed a lot was students observing and assessing one another, not assessment for a grade, of course, but assessment on how they're performing the skill and utilizing task sheets. So if you've got your rubric and the kids know exactly what, how they're supposed to perform that skill, if you and I are partners and we each have one of those documents, then I'll watch you perform it and then I'll evaluate and then we'll talk about it. And then I'll do it and we'll do the same thing and we'll kind of continue to do this and use that document to not only think about what we're supposed to be doing well, but also to watch what the other person is doing and give them some feedback. And I'd be more than happy to share with you some templates that some of the grads have made that just so you could see what I'm talking about. The other thing that one of our local teachers here, she uses BAM Video Delay. It's an app. And Rach, do you have our kids? I'll let you explain it because you use that in class.
Yeah, so one of the classes that I teach, we use two different apps. We use, it's just called Generic Video Delay. There's BAM, but you have to pay for BAM. But we just have a Generic Video Delay app. And that one is really good for self-assessment too. So I don't know in terms of equipment what you have, but even to have like a station with one iPad set up, essentially what happens is you can pick, there's like different things. You can have like a single thing on the screen. You can have four different quadrants on the screen. So it shows like 20-second intervals of what the kids are doing. And basically you would have them perform whatever fundamental movement skill or skill that you're having them self-assess. And then they would do the skill in front of the iPad. And then they would just go around to the opposite side of it. And then they can watch themselves actually do the skill. So they can self-assess and see what parts of the technique maybe they're doing correctly or not doing. And again, you can give them, you know, a sheet of things to look for, verbally tell them or whatever. And then Coach's Eye is probably, well, I don't know. Kids are so good with technology. It might not be out of bounds for elementary at this point. But Coach's Eye is really nice too. It also is a video app. I like that one for more. You could do self-assessment. You could have a peer record them and then have them look at themselves, but it's also really nice for peer assessment. And the nice thing about Coach's Eye is that there's things called markups. So once you take the video, you can slow it down, you can put voiceover over it. And it's a good one for teachers too, to do assessment on students, because then you can save it and look at it later, right? So if you have a lot of kids in your class or a lot of things going on, you can always take the video and then go through and edit the video and then give it back to them either via email or however you just want to disperse it. And then you can draw arrows, you can look at angles, you can circle things. So while you're doing it, you can slow it down and you can rewind it. And so you can say, so here, you know, let's say we're talking about the skill of throwing, right? You did a really good job starting out with your T, but when we make it to our lazy L, you know, your arm is actually really far down here. We want to make sure that it's up a little bit higher. You can draw a circle and like an arrow to show them where you want it to be, right? So, and as we know, administrators also love the use of technology. So those are good things to do. But yeah, those are two apps that I teach when I teach our students how to teach dance in particular, but you can use it for anything.
And the elementary teacher, I'm thinking about the kids. Oh my gosh, they just love it. I mean, they'll perform the skill and she had just a sheet of paper on the tripod with the iPad that only looking for specific things, like just throwing step in opposition, you know? And so the kid would, you know, throw two or three times and run around and do it. And then they'd go right back and try to correct it. And I was just amazed at how hard these kids worked at it. I mean, that was, it was awesome. I mean, they were, well, they love making fun of themselves and each other as well. So that was pretty entertaining. But is that helpful, Dustin? Is that what you were thinking of, or more summative types of assessment things?
No, that's kind of the idea. I've used peer assessment before. I taught middle school for a few years, so I use peer assessment there. And I've tried that before. I was just trying to think of some new ideas, and then we have a hybrid, so we have virtual students, and we were full virtual last month, and so we did a lot of self-assessment, and we use Flipgrid and all those kind of videos. So that, I think the kids now are pretty good with the technology after being virtual and doing all that stuff. So just kind of getting some ideas. The apps are sound very nice. I'm going to look into that.
Sorry, Jenna, really quick. Coach's Eye, there is a free one called Huddle. So Coach's Eye, you have to pay for, just like BAM. It's just Video Delay is the free one. And then Huddle is the free version of Coach's Eye. So just so you know, so you don't have to pay for them.
Yeah, I coach football, so we use Huddle all the time. So that's a good one.
Dustin and Steph, are your schools one-to-one?
We are. I teach K through four. And at last I knew our kindergartners are really the only ones that don't have devices. So that was nice. Everybody else is one-to-one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dustin, how about you?
Yep, all the kids, the K and first grade have iPads, and second through sixth have Chromebooks. So they all had them since this beginning of this year. So it's been very nice.
So one of the things that I did when I was still teaching is all my students kept a book. Let's just call we use Book Creator, and kids would talk about, let's talk about the skill of overhand throwing. And so they would have like a chapter on overhand throwing, and every time they wanted to put in a video, they would be, all right, they could take off their old video if they wanted to, or they could leave on their old video and put their new one on. And I always had them write about, you know, when you break down a skill, I tried to give them no more than five things to think about. If you're talking about overhand throwing, you know, you'd start in your T with your opposite side to your target. And then you, like Rachel, you said you did your lazy L. So my kids would be L, and then step towards your target, and then twist and throw. So the kids would always be able to talk about or break down those five things, and they would be able to speak directly to one of those five things. Like, this is what I learned. This is how my video has changed since last time. So that they're using video skill, videotaping others. They have to recognize what the five things are that they're looking for in a particular skill. They're using their writing skills. I would always have them take it home and show their mom and dad. And I would give, I was one for bonus points, and they never would, you know, they couldn't buy anything with their points. I'd be like, Deb, you got 1,000,000 points. But if their mom and dad would record something, their mom and dad throwing, you'd get 1,000,000 points. It was 2,000,000 points if your grandma did something that fit with that skill. But so that you are taking it home, and you're creating this conversation and this connection at home, and then just getting this iPad that's just rotating around, and then you just make that learning real for that family. You know, it's not fake, it's not made up, but there's this interaction that is that triangle between the student, the parent, and the teacher. So I think the best one was when I had a grandma do a cartwheel. Hey, and I'm loving that, Dustin. Who is that tonight giving out the hugs?
That's Grayson. He's my 5-year-old.
Oh, Grayson, that was nice. Way to go.
So with this book, do you do it for like certain skills for units, or do them pretty much for every unit, like a main skill?
Okay, so for each of them, well, for whatever my students were working on. So what my third graders were working on certainly wasn't anything that my fifth graders were working on. So when my third graders were working maybe on throwing, that's what their unit or that's what their chapter in their book was. And we would work on it. If that's what we're working on in class, that's the chapter that we're working on. Their iPads came with them every time I saw them. My fifth graders, they might be working on the getting open. Maybe we are working on trying to work on some long-handled stick control, and I needed them to control the puck and then pass to the open person. So there might be that more of a standard too, understanding how to move in space, how to create open. So then the kids had to do some deeper thinking and some deeper skills of writing and recognizing what is that going to look like. And then, you know, if you're teaching something different the next time you see them, then you just have your kids label it. Like, what are we working on today? They should be able to label it. And it was never, we're working on soccer. No, soccer is a game. What are we really working on?
Penny, did you set up the, because our kids use Book Creator in APE. And I think, and Jenna, you might be able to help me with this, but did you set up, I don't want to say the chapters, but the for example, did you give them the critical elements you wanted them to work on and they had to identify? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think that's really important that you are identifying with your students. This is the skill that we're working on. This is what it's called. And these are the five critical elements that we want to learn, that we want to be able to say, I'm stepping with the opposite foot, or I'm stepping with the same foot, that kids be able to look at the video and say, oh yeah, see, when I'm throwing overhand, I should be stepping with my opposite foot, and clearly I'm not. But just giving them the five.
Well, and what I believe in APE, once the student demonstrates, for example, stepping in opposition, then they could just put a video clip in of them stepping in opposition, and then another little clip of them being in their T position. So they were actually putting in multiple clips of the student demonstrating that. So they had the each of the pieces, even if they weren't all together, that they could see.
Mm-hmm. I know I worked closely with my kindergarten teachers, because in kindergarten, they begin to learn the process of writing. And so the kids would take a picture of a throw. And so they'd all come with their iPads and, oh, how do we start a throw? And then you teach a kid how to take a picture of somebody else and they're standing in their tee. And it was just this really nice collaborative work with the classroom teacher in building that relationship, that kids should be able to write and demonstrate writing skills, even though they're in physical education. They're writing about something that's meaningful to them. So just, you know, looking at how you can partner up with other teachers in your building and get things done that you need done.
I think that's a really important part, Penny, that you just talked about, teaching them how to use it and talking about what kind of a photo. I think that's one thing that's commonly missed, especially when I'm working with my pre-service teachers. They just expect the students to be able to know how to use the assessment or what's expected of them, right? And they're so capable of it, but I think it's important to talk through that, right? Like, what is it that we're actually looking to do? And you do it once and teach them, and then it just gets easier the next time. So I think that's a really critical piece that's often missed. Mm-hmm. Just like you would any other skill or task that you teach, assessment is done the same way. So good point on that.
I think that when the kids created their books, it really made parent-teacher conferences powerful. Kids would come walking in with their mom and dad. They get their iPad underneath their armpit. They walk in and they open it up. And I'm like, okay, let's tell the story. And kids just going through their book creator and talking to their mom and dad about all of the learning that took place during that particular section that we're looking at. It was no longer about the, you know, sometimes those parent-teacher conferences are like, uncomfortable because the parents don't understand what it is that you do in your classroom, and kids go home and they say, oh, well, we just play. Well, no, there's learning going on. So that using the iPads just really allowed kids' learning to become powerful, and for them to be able to tell their story of what really is going on and what is so important about physical literacy and their journey of figuring out how do they move their bodies.
Well, and something that we've been talking about a lot as a program is beyond, and there's no question what we do with the psychomotor domain, that we have to teach them those skills, but there are so many other things that they learn in our programs or in our classrooms. In, you know, standard four, you know, personal and social responsibility, and providing examples of how they're doing those things as well. And I think that's an opportunity, like you had mentioned, Penny, with a classroom teacher where they can be writing things down. They can be self-assessing, and then, you know, when they leave the classroom, tapping out, I call it tapping out, and, you know, where were you today on a 0 to 4 scale? And if I watch you do it and you're wrong, or not wrong, but we disagree, then let's have a conversation about it. So not only the skill portion of it, but actually assessing, you know, the cognitive and what are you learning, and the affective of the personal and social responsibility and how I'm treating one another. And we often have conversations, at least I do, really early in the program, of You know, what does it look like to work hard, or what does it mean to be a good teammate? And, you know, that's, those are really hard to assess. But if you lay that out and lay those expectations out, then I can do that. And, you know, and the kids will be able to provide examples of that, I believe, be it through video or even writing or a conversation with you. So I think that's a piece of assessment that I know I have to get better at with our students too. Not to always just think about the psychomotor, even though it is a tremendously important piece of what we do, but you know, every school has be safe, be respectful, be responsible, and not every school, but some version of it likely. And how are we actually promoting that within our classroom and assessing that, because we're in such a different environment where there is physical contact, or there can be, purposeful or not purposeful. And so I think assessing that is also an important piece of what we should be doing.
I feel like in our jobs as physical education teachers, you just have all of these moments to work with kids and help mold them be amazing people, like having conversations with each other and saying, I am here to be your peer assessor, and I need to deliver you a message that you're missing this particular critical element, and I need to be not hurtful in how I deliver that. And, you know, just be very teach kids how to have these conversations and not be hurtful. Hey, you are not stepping with the opposite foot. You're not supposed to do that. But how do you have that conversation and just try to model, well, how would you want to hear that? And or if they're missing it, what are all the different ways that I could tell them that they're missing that particular critical element? You know, I don't know that they would learn that in a science class. I don't know if they would learn that during English language arts, but they would learn it in our class. So being purposeful in teaching kids how to have conversations and how to be a peer reviewer.
Well, and even being honest in self-assessment.
I mean, kids are so self-critical. You know,
Well, and but it can go both ways. You know, I think I always kind of joke about when I coached men's volleyball versus the women, you know, the men never do anything wrong. Sorry, guys. You know, and the women can't do anything right. And it's just that persona. But if I go, you know, if I run around and look at my video, oh yeah, I'm doing it all right. Well, no, you're not. And why is this not okay for you to say that? And, you know, I think that's an important piece, just like with the peers, not only how am I talking to others, but am I being truthful in what I'm seeing or what I'm relaying when I'm doing my own self-assessment.
This is such an exciting conversation. I'm like all jacked up listening to you. I'll talk about this. I think one of the coolest things about this conversation, I think this is really like amped up for us in our world of physical education in the last couple of years, especially with SEL coming around and being hot for us, and really being excited about and intentional about teaching these different outcomes in the affective domain, right? So it's not just like, hey, I'm going to teach you to be a better person. Like, this is actually something that we can help our students identify. Hey, today we're going to be talking and learning about X, Y, and Z. Right? Just like we would with our critical elements and kicking, for example, right? Like this is an intentional outcome for us. And so when you're going around for the unit or for your class that day, like you're cueing too, hey, how are we talking to one another? Like, how did you give feedback? Right? And so it's a really exciting thing. And it's a change of pace for us to where I think in the past, many people would say, and myself included when I was teaching, right? I would have this affective thing and it would come up in these moments that would just happen to come up, right? In the class, as opposed to being intentional and like cueing to it, like throughout, like I'm going to use this task to develop, to put these students in this unique situation. So they have to experience this and they have to talk about it. And we can learn through the class in line with maybe something else we're doing that day, right? Some other skill or, which also would be intentional, but I think it's a really cool conversation that we're having right now. It's not just something that happens unless we talk to our students about it, you know, before, you know, in our set induction right away, like during the class, and then also at the end, and holding them accountable to keep working on that, like recognizing, you know, others' feelings, right? Like getting beyond yourself is such a hard thing, you know, for students to get past, especially in the elementary and middle schooler and even high, and even ourselves, right? today, who am I kidding? But, you know, like helping them identify, like, well, what kinds of emotions are we talking about? Is it nonverbal or is it verbal? And what do those words even mean, right? And so there's so much to cover and teach too. And I think the cool thing is that we absolutely have a space to do that because of our environment and it's just really cool. So, yeah.
I want to, sorry, Dan, go ahead.
I just want to mention though, and kind of dovetail off of some of the things that have been said about teaching, you know, students how to have conversations. And that is something that's very important regarding EDI. I mean, students need to be able to talk to each other regarding things involving equity, diversity, and inclusion. I mean, those topics alone are things that kind of scare people, including teachers. And teachers need to learn how to have those conversations. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of teachers don't have those conversations. They don't know how. So if we can teach students how to have those conversations, how do you tell a classmate that they're not performing a skill correctly, but not make it negative, like Penny was talking about? But how do you phrase that in, you know, a positive, constructive manner? And hopefully then something like that can carry over into other conversations. It's just it's a building block.
I think about how often, you know, we have kids, and we ran into this in our homeschool program, I don't know if a year or two, well, a couple years now, prior to COVID, and we had a really rambunctious age group. And so what we asked our pre-service teachers to do was switch partners a lot. And what we did within that lesson is the lesson was all about, it shouldn't matter who you're partnered up with, but how do you treat them and how do you talk to them? And how do you share equipment with them? So we had, it was throwing, but it had nothing to do with throwing that day. And we really focused on treating one another kindly, using kind words. You know, we had a couple tones of voices, you know, how should you be yelling at them? You know, those types of things. And that was the first experience that I think I even just really recognized, like, these kids don't, we tell them, be nice. Well, they don't know what that means. And I think it's like what you had said, Dan, too, with EDI that and SEL right now, those are such areas that we can focus on that's exciting because we've got a unique environment to do it in.
Yeah, I mean, our environment is just, you know, so much different than other environments, other subject areas where, for the most part, students are either confined in their desk, or if they are moving around, it's not to the degree or the intensity that they move around in physical education. So yeah, it is a very much a unique environment.
What do you got, Steph? Give us something here.
I'm having fun listening to all these awesome ideas, that's for sure. One thing that so we have two elementary schools in our district. I teach at the Coon Valley Elementary School, which is our smaller of the two. But then we have Westby Elementary, which is the larger of the two. And between myself and the other PE teacher, we've really realized at the end of our second quarter of school, especially with having to do so much virtual and just see our students in a different way because we're not at school. We are now. We're back face-to-face now, but we spent a majority of the fall either full virtual or something in between being face-to-face and full virtual. But we just have realized our report card is in need of some definite upgrades. It's really heavy in, you know, like we talked about the psychomotor domain and standard 1 and some of standard 4, and everything else is not on there, you know? So talking about picking out what would be the most important elements to put on our report card to make it more encompassing of all of the standards, not just a couple of them. And then again, like you guys are talking about, all these great ideas and how to put them in our curriculum sequentially and kind of even things out so it's not so heavy and just, you know, what's the skill?
Are your report card standards based?
They're standards based, but they're lacking in all of, you know, the standards. So like we'll grade on, you know what I mean? So I guess they're partially standards based, depends on who you ask, I guess. You know, so like we're filling out the report cards for our kids and our grading window was closed today. And, you know, the last thing we want to put on there is not assessed. But with the virtual instruction, there was a lot of things we didn't see from kids depending on their level of virtual participation, you know? And so some of the things that we tried to grade were really subjective based on what we know from prior knowledge. We weren't really able to measure a bunch of new types of learning because of, I think, how our report card is set up. And then also just because of the situation itself. So we kind of, I mean, I felt like we survived getting through the virtual instruction, but definitely I'm feeling like we're going to have all of this trying to squeeze stuff in now that we're back face to face, just because I don't feel like I got a good handle on it with my kids while we were gone.
So virtually, how did you assess? And I'm curious, Dustin, how you all did it too, because I can't, the psychomotor would be hard to say the least to do that because of equipment. I mean, just so many different parameters, but what did you assess kids on while you were virtual or learning? You know, I'm just thinking about like learning outcomes. Did you shift away from movement outcomes, and did you go to, you know, some of the other, you know, standard 3, 4, or 5? Or did you, you know, was it, did you want them up and active and off, more or less off screen time? Because I've talked with teachers and, you know, we just want them up and out of their seats. And that we just want them active, that they need that activity time. I'm just curious to how you approach that.
Ours was mostly activity based. And so I used all my assessments on Seesaw. So kids were sending back videos of different exercises that they were challenged to do, or demonstrating how to strengthen your hamstring muscle, because that was our muscle of the week, and giving feedback on that. And we also went into some like nutrition too, just challenges with, can you find this, you know, or this food group? Where's an example of this food group at your house or something like that? So that was kind of where I went with it, just because we weren't able to give out any equipment to when we were all virtual. We still have some students who are virtual. So like when we start our jump rope unit, we'll give equipment to those kids because we have enough, but we couldn't do that for everybody. So
I focus a lot on the cognitive side. So I would ask questions that the kids had to fill out with the help of their parents. We use Google Classroom. So that was a school-wide, everyone used Google Classroom. And so I would just ask a question like we did, balancing and tumbling, and for the full virtual that we were gone. And I asked, you know, which role do you tuck your chin in and kick off your front foot, or off your feet, and, you know, kind of have them think about it, and they could tell me, or which role were you facing to the side, curling the ball. And then the kids just answer those questions. And I, in my assignment, I was like, have parents help fill it out. So it's like my kindergartners and first graders, you know, weren't on an island there. They could get some help, and the parents knew that they can help them write them in. And with my older kids, we did dance was the main unit. So we did Flipgrid. So I set up a Flipgrid and they videotaped themselves. I got to assess them. I gave them 3 options and they got to pick which one they wanted to do. So there was about 2 minutes worth of dancing for each of them. We were only full virtual for everyone for that 1 month, but I still have virtual kids. So I did a lot of self-assessment. So it's like, what would you give So I did a few of those and some cognitive. They answered the questions again, like, could they name a cue, how to teach someone how to throw a Frisbee. So I have them try to explain how to throw a Frisbee. And for the younger ones, we just did a fitness one. So I was going over all the different types of exercises to help build muscle, how to build heart builders. And I had them as a family come up with like a kind of like a circuit. They do 10 exercises for a minute, and they get to pick the exercises and what they want to do as a family. So that was their assignment this week.
I love how you're engaging the family in that. Do you get pretty good response from families with that?
Quite a bit of our staff at the elementary, they have kids. So they're like, thanks, I had to do the twist last night. And I was like, yeah, you're welcome, you know. And so there's a lot of resources on YouTube too that have videos, and those are always great because families can do it. A lot of technology, they can easily upload the YouTube videos, and they're fun. I get a lot of feedback on those that they really enjoy those. So a lot of interesting things families.
Sounds like your kids want to get on there and do the twist.
Yeah, they're all full of energy now right before bed. So all four of them, they're ready to fight not going to bed right now. So
sounds like you need to be giving out some million points to your families. You got a million.
I guess my other kind of question bringing up just talking about quarter grades and report cards is, at like the university level, you know, what is your stance and what is, you know, what are you guys thinking and seeing and hearing about grading in general? Because we've had this conversation in our district too, especially with some of the changes that have happened. I mean, this whole virtual instruction is another category in itself, just how it's going to play out. But it's just bringing up a lot of aha moments, and light bulbs are going off as to, you know, how is our traditional method of grading really assessing what kids know, you know? So I don't know if you guys have any insights on that.
I'm going to let Jenna, she explained, and when we co-taught a curriculum course together, and it was just a hoot, and she explained grading versus assessment with our kids. And I'm going to let her do that because it was just phenomenal. And I was like, holy crap, I wish I would have known that, you know, when I was teaching at the high school level. And so, yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot, Jenna, because this was one of the things that you totally got me on this one. So it's all yours.
All right. Well, I'll try to do it justice. Thanks for that, Deb. I am by no means do I know everything. This is just a way that I have kind of try to make sense of it in my mind that helped me the most. You know, Steph, the question that you're having, and Deb, what you just talked about, I was in the same boat when I was teaching. I knew what we were doing was not the best way for students and to show it objectively where they were, but I didn't know how to do it. And so the best way that I have been able to come up with it, and the way I talk to my students about it, is, you know, each school and each grade, or each school, is going to be totally different, and maybe even each grade based on what your students need, right? So before I even start, and I think about, this goes back to your curriculum as well, when you're thinking about what you're teaching, like what domains and what standards do these students really need? And if we think about like this time of, if we think about this time through COVID, right, when they've been home, you know, you think about, you know, your curriculum may have changed, right? It's like, what do our students really need? Do we need to be focusing on what we had, you know, with our traditional curriculum at home? Or is it something else we need to focus on, maybe a heavier standard for example, or in that affective domain, for example? You may have found yourself focusing on that more than not, right? So if you think about the three domains, like, where would you, from the start, like, percentile outcomes for your students? Like, Steph, if you think about psychomotor, cognitive, and affective, think about your students, where would you place like a percentile? Like, if you were to think about, if you thought about a student's grade and really what you
would, like, dividing it out between the three domains.
Like, think about 100%, like, where would you put your, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I would say like I'm throwing out numbers right now. I'm by no means saying this is what you should do or have to do, but say we would do like say 40% psychomotor, you know, 40% cognitive and, you know, 20% affective, for example, right? And then in the psychomotor, you've got process and product. So you'd have to weigh out what you'd want your summative assessments to be, right? And I say it in the domains in that way, but if we really look at our standards, you know, we do it top down and we think about our standards, your standard one is your psychomotor, right? Your cognitive is your two. Maybe you could get into some three there, depending on how you wanted to write it out. You know, you're affective with four, maybe some five, right? And so you kind of weigh like what's going to best represent what I want my students to learn. So that's kind of the first question that I ask. And then I've got my standards. So the other thing is to think about at the end of your unit, like what will represent what you want your students to know at the end of the unit, right? Like what standards are you teaching to, and have a summative assessment for your students in that specific domain. And then for formatively, you know, you do that all throughout it. My opinion on formative is that it's used to see where my students are in their learning, to help me understand where my students are in their learning, to feedback my students, what they know or don't know, you know, all this discussion about like the books that we're using that Penny talked about, right? Like, you know, she's asking students to go and do that and they're learning throughout that whole process, right? And then you could have a summative at the end if you identify, now here's the kicker for me, if you identified, say, like third grade as a kick to be proficient, that's what you've determined that your students at third grade wanted this kick to be proficient as, I might identify that standard of a kick to go into the grade book at third grade, right? So then you're looking at, you're not trying to summatively assess everything because you can't, right? You're going to wear yourself out, you know, and if you look at your specific grades, what standards and what outcome are you deeming they should, now this is your students, right? Like, you know who you have in front of you. It'd be totally different at a school in La Crosse or maybe a school in Milwaukee or in Texas or Alabama or whatever, right? Like, what are you deeming as that outcome for your students to be at that level, to be at the satisfactory, proficient, you know, whatever your three, you know, are for that specific standard and maybe an outcome underneath of it. And so it just gets, I really like thinking about it that way. And then if you had to make it into a percentile, right? If you were to look across the standards and if you were to talk to students and give them like, now this is transitioning to middle or high school, right? Because it's not, you know, satisfactory proficient anymore. Now you have to give them a letter grade. And that's where the percentiles work for me and help me rationalize what I'm waiting on, say the psychomotor domain, cognitive or affective, to rationalize what they're really learning. You know, maybe I feel, my personal opinion, I'm definitely all about student learning. If I need to take a couple physical activity minutes to help them learn, I'm going to do that. But that's my philosophy, right? So I think you need to figure out what your philosophy is and where you're placing your percentile, I guess. I don't know if that helps make sense. Or if that was helpful, or if I went in circles, but that's kind of how I've helped to kind of think about like, what's really important to me? Mm-hmm. Where am I placing my efforts for students at each grade level?
Yeah. And I think similarly, I think of it as in percentiles as well. I feel like it changes almost from like we talked about, or you talked about class to class. Last year, my third graders, the percentiles for psychomotor, cognitive, affective were here. And then this year's third graders, it's a totally different ball game. They honestly really need more in the affective than anywhere else, you know? So I feel like just being able to have the flexibility to grade differently across classes, but still be able to put that on a report card that's going to have to, you know, stay one way. Nobody here changes their report card every year, do they? We can't, I don't think. We go on a rotation. I suppose we could if we really reached out and asked, but
you know. I think the cool thing is at elementary, right? You don't necessarily have to do it in percentiles, right? Now tell me if I'm wrong. I'm not doing what you do at all, right? So you don't have to, right? So then you can kind of say, okay, they're developing, right? Or this is generally like where we've seen students of how many classes, how many grades that have come through, we're developing right now. We're not proficient, right? And so that's okay. It's not you're bad or you're awful. It's just, hey, this is where we are.
Right. And I feel like personally for my school district, the wording on our report card and the grading scale, because our grading scale is the same across all subjects. So as they go from K1 to 2, 3, 4, it changes from the developing and beginning proficient wording to a 1 is your at grade level, and this is your above, and this is your below. And so I think that's really hard to put on like a second grade report card is, oh, your child is below. Like just the wording itself is not conducive to an open relationship of wanting to teach and wanting to learn. I feel like it's kind of degrading and out. It might be just simply outdated, you know? I've been in my district this is my fourth year, and it's been the same report card. So that's something on our list to tackle, to update and just make it more conducive to a process of learning, not a simple, this is what you got this quarter.
I think the cool thing though, too, you know, if you really do focus on the standards outside of just standard one, you're going to have some of those students who may not be proficient in that standard one, right? And instead they get to tell their parents and how excited they are about their learning that's happening, right? So maybe they know it, but they just can't. Maybe they're proficient at learning it, right? Or they know it, but they just can't do it yet, right? So it changes the conversation, with your students and what's on their report card. If you're across different domains for what your students really need and what you're valuing, which is kind of cool too, which I think is very different than, right, the way it used to be in the past. It just was, you get one across the board, you're either beginning developing or you're proficient, and that's what you are for PE. Right. So that's a pretty cool conversation.
Steph, I asked if your report cards were standards based, because the West Salem Middle School has gone to standards based on their report card, and they piloted it. And we worked with them. And so when the first report card rolled out, you know, they had it was for the end of the semester or end of the school year or semester. I can't remember. But so they had their standards listed. And for example, they didn't get through like the first quarter, they got through maybe a quarter of them. So all of these other things were, you know, not observed or something like that. And they had to inform the parents of what that meant. It didn't mean their kid wasn't learning. It means we haven't gotten to it yet. And the kids were getting it, and the kids were able to explain it to their parents. Like, we're learning, they focus on standard 2 at the middle school. And, you know, we're learning to find open space and all of these things, but we haven't gotten to this piece yet. And so their battle with the standards based was the parents didn't have any idea what it meant. And so the conference, Josh, one of the teachers had said, you know, we saw more parents than we'd ever seen because nobody knew what the heck was going on. But what was good about it is they were able to have that conversation and say, you know, we haven't taught it yet. This, we've got to start here to be able to get to there. And so that's why I'd asked. And I think that's a piece of it too, is the, your administrators may not even understand, you know, standards based. And so that might be a piece of it too.
We're standards based at my school, and we switched about 2 years ago, and we use a 1 through 4 scale. So 3 is about grade level, 4 is your above grade, 2 is developing, and 1 is you really need a lot of work. And our principal kind of said, you know, they really got to be really low for a 1. So the idea is most kids are 2 and 3. I have a few 4s in some areas for that grade level, but like I was kind of thinking, but my standards, I could only have 8 standards. I think that was the most. So I was trying to fit as much as I could in those 8 standards. My principal was like, you can only have 8. I'm like, oh, okay. And so I kind of got specific on some skills. Like we do roller skating. So the 1 is, can you exhibit balance and roller skate? And I went very specific because that's something we do and the kids like, and the parents be like, oh, okay, that's a skill we're working on. And then I'm very broad in like fitness assessment. So I hit standard 3 is like, and we use our fitness gram. That's a main component, but also warm ups and cool downs, and they understand fitness areas. And then I also hit the social emotional learning with Can you work well with others? It's kind of what the standard is. It's cooperatively with others, but I hit it. It's like another broad range. So it's like they wanted specifics and broad and trying to fit it all in. But I like what I like about standards. Yeah, we do trimesters at my school. So like the first trimester, I'd be like, yeah, your kid's at a 2 for this, but we're doing it through the whole year. So by the end of the third trimester, they could be at a 3, and it's not a big deal. And with the fitness assessments as well, with a lot of our virtual kids didn't get it in. So it's like, I had a 1, and the parents are like, why are they at a 1? Well, they didn't do the fitness gram test. They didn't show that they did anything. And it's a part of it. But I said, well, we have it again, so they can easily go up to a 3 if you, or a 2, if, you know, they do it and they can explain how they did it. And so the parents kind of understand that with the standards base, which I kind of like. And I can change them from year to year. I've done that already between the 2 years. I had one that I didn't like after my first year. So I feel standard base is pretty important.
And that's how ours is set up too. We can have 7 areas that we grade on, and we can be, it's, you know, they're broadly written out, and then you can be as specific as you want in what goes into those categories. I'm just wondering if how they're worded and how it's set up should be changed. But I really like, there's a lot of similarities, Dustin, between yours and mine from the way it sounds. And so that's actually kind of a peace of mind for me. So we're similar with you. So that makes me feel good that we're not super archaic. I just know that we need to probably make a few changes.
So Dustin, then, so you've got on the report card, the standard that you're working towards, and then do you lay out throughout the year, the substandards to help them reach that? Like what you had said, well, we didn't do that yet, so you have a 1, which makes complete sense. And that's where the middle school, they were like, they had to do the explaining just like you did. Then your objectives and everything throughout the year, then just build to that overall, the standard that you're working towards. So the kids know, you know, to get a 4, this is what I need to accomplish within the standard.
Yeah, it's the whole school kind of uses a whole broadband. So I think how it's worded, I'm also a parent, so it makes sense as well when I read it, that the 4 is exceptional. Like you're way above grade level, and you're the cream of the crop. 3 is where you want to be. That's grade level. That's what your kid is, what we expect your kid to do. If they get 3s, that is wonderful. That's where they need to be. And then 2s is they're getting there. And that's all we keep saying. They're developing, they're getting there. We feel that eventually if they keep working, they'll get there. And then I got some 1s, it's like, okay, this is where parents can contact you, because they know that 1s are not good and something went wrong, and they'll let you know and what's going on. They're asked what there's going on. And if I have to have a conference, I'd be like, they extremely didn't show me anything. I mean, we did the assessments in the school, in class. They didn't do anything. They didn't do anything the whole unit. I can't assess them really because they didn't show me, because they were defiant. So that's a 1. And the parents like, oh, okay. But then I can kind of, if it's one of my broad ones, like, you know, the throwing and catching and kicking and rolling a ball, we do that throughout the whole year. So I'm like, maybe we do it again. They're in a better mood that day, and they can get me some assessments, and hopefully the score can be better. So it kind of reassures the parents that, oh, okay, it's not that 1 is always going to be there. So like I have a 5K kid at the end of the first trimester, he knew 7 letters. And so now he knows 23. So it's like, oh, it's something we got to work on. So we work on it at home, and then we work at it in class. So it's kind of keeping it in the simple terms there. So right now I'm hosting a student teacher. She started this week. And so I was just wondering good assessments that she could use that I would explain to a student, you know, try these out while you teach. I've obviously shared everything I've done, so I was just wondering if there were any other great ideas for a future professional.
I love clickers. I have my students do clickers in their field experiences. It's just an awesome, quick, formative tool. It's something the students will have to get used to knowing, like what their number is and how to do it. It might take a minute the first day, but it's a really cool just check-in and a really cool learning opportunity right then and there, right? If they didn't know it, they get informed right away, which is pretty cool. Also, I love Google Forms. Are pretty awesome, especially for the teacher. If you go on and do like a, like just a traditional observation. So if you were to do a rubric of a skill, if you have like a 1, 2, or 3 or something that you're watching, you can use the same form over and over and over again with classes and download the data, right? And then see overarching, like maybe, man, we evaluated all of these skills and, you know, this particular student, for example, is at a 1, or maybe we realize that all of our students are at a 1. Right. And man, we really need to rethink how we're teaching this or maybe go back and teach it. And it's a really, it's a nice way to gather the data, quick look at it and make an informed decision, which is pretty neat. The Google Forms is pretty cool and worth it, I think.
I think that's really important to remember that we as teachers need to be constantly reflective of what's going on. Not, you can't just say with my fifth graders, because you might have 3 classes of fifth graders. You have to be responsive to what's happening in each individual class and responding to those students where they are at that moment. And you might have your fifth grade, you hate to have it happen this way, but you, if you have 3 fifth graders, they're all in different spots, and that's okay, because that's where those students are. And if you're using clickers or you're using Google Forms, you are able to instantaneously have that help guide you in where you need to lead your teachings. We're bumping up against 8 o'clock here, and I feel like, man, we are just digging into this.
I just put a website up, supportrealteachers.com, and there's an assessment. It's a good website, and there's a ton of information on it. And they do have some examples in there. And I also have a document that I use with my kids. It's 60 formative assessments, so it's a lot of different things. And if I can get an email from Steph, I've got yours, but if I can get your email, Dustin, then I can email you that. And it's just a ton of different ways that you can, and you can modify too. I give it to them really early in the program, which they don't understand when I give it to them what really it's for. But the hope is as they progress throughout the program, they have more of an understanding of it. But happy to share that with the both of you if you'd like. Got it.
Great. Well, while I have all of you on here, don't anyone go. February 3rd is our next Zoom meeting, and Tim Miller is going to be leading it. Tim is our middle division vice president, and his Zoom is going to be Survive and Thrive in Your Rookie Years of Teaching Physical Education. So I feel like that will be very interesting, and I almost wonder if it shouldn't even be rookie years of teaching physical education. Sometimes it's just survive and thrive. All right. Any other questions that we want to ask and have answered while we have this wealth of knowledge here tonight with us?
Come on, Rach, share your wealth of knowledge.
I know, sorry, I am fading fast. I am trying to stay awake. Those of you that were not here, I'm 34 weeks pregnant, so I'm very tired this morning.
I got on here right when you were finishing talking about that, and I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I'm like bowing down to you right now because
I am just I'm hitting and I'm not moving and I'm sitting, so I'm sorry I've not been participatory. I'm mentally here sort of, but I'd be happy at any point if you guys do have specific questions. Assessment is something that Jenna and I in particular geek out all the time on. We come up with all sorts of crazy ideas and we're always doing new stuff. And I wish I could think of a really great golden nugget that I feel like has been awesome that we've done over the past couple semesters, but my brain is about this big right now. So I apologize, but at any point I would be more than happy to help. You can find any of our email addresses on our UWL website, and my areas of expertise are gymnastics and dance. I help out with the fundamental movement skills class, so K-2. That's what I've taught previously. I also do supervision analysis at the grad level, but we'll be switching it up again in the fall, so I'll be teaching new stuff. But as my children are also invading the screen. So anyways, I'd be happy to help at some other point when I can do some jumping jacks or something and get myself a little bit more alive. But sorry for not being very participatory, but the conversation is great. And like I said, love to geek out on assessment in particular. So and any questions that you have, I'd be happy to try to help.
Hi, Jen and Deb. Hi, Jen and Deb.
Hey, girls.
Hi, girls.
And I'm going to mute us.
I kind of feel left out. Wow. Well, I just want to thank everybody here tonight for coming and being a part of this. Just what a wonderful inspirational moment that we had tonight, thinking about, you know, what is possible, what are we doing and what is possible, and, you know, assessment, it should really be the first thing that we are thinking about as we're planning. What do we want our kids to know, and how am I going to know that they know it, and planning to use the right tool to gather that information. So I just want to thank everyone for coming tonight, and looking forward to seeing you guys in another couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do right now is stop the recording.